talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marian way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today, the Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday, April 12th, 2024. Only if you heard during the breaks what was going on here. Pastor Craig and Matt Morgan live in the studio here. And, there's no recorders running in here during the break, is there?
Fortunately not.
Holy mackerel. Well, Pastor, you've been here and gotten to be a witness today to the fallout from the trip to Philadelphia last weekend. What do you make of the whole kit and caboodle?
Definitely, I'm going to have to spend some time here family counseling.
I think so. There's definitely... But just to wrap it up for somebody who might be listening, I'm not sure what happened. I said beforehand, I think I'm on the record as saying that Matt and Carrington don't talk. It did not shock me that there would not be a whole lot of conversation on that car ride, but that there was, call it whatever you will, hostility, disagreement, whatever, that went on for 3 days. I didn't expect that, so... There you go.
And I did hear Matt say this earlier today that she's just boring.
Yeah, boring. You laid into her a few times earlier today.
I don't think so. I think the only thing I said was that she was boring. Okay. And I think she's boring to me because, like I said, we don't have the same interest.
We have nothing in common. She's boring.
I like the fishing, the hunting, the history, the politics, that kind of thing. Carrington likes, you know, pop culture. That kind of thing. So, like, I don't know what to talk about when I'm talking. Anything that she'd be interested in, I probably don't know anything about or have no interest in, and vice versa.
Okay. Well,
there it was.
Yep. Family counseling.
Walking the streets of New York, I'm telling you. Those muggers would have been scared to come up on our conversation.
Let's mug somebody else.
Let them ones walk by.
They look like they already having a heated conversation over there. We don't need to go by that. But on the whole, it's hard because people are going to hear this and think it was a bad time. It was not a bad time at all. It was an incredibly fun time for me because I didn't have a disagreement with anybody. I always had somebody around me. It was always fun. I just had the best time.
That's good.
Now, Pastor, do you think I'm in the wrong with this story I told her? Because I hope the person's not listening because they get ticked when I even bring it up. But this is what I said. When I came back on Tuesday,
right,
I saw this person for the first time, and they said to me, "How was your weekend?" I said, "It was great. I had fun. Unbelievable." Okay, I said, "How was your weekend? Weather was great. When did some yard work?" So on and so forth. Okay. And they said, "Well, tell me more about your weekend." And I said, it's kind of hard to describe what went on to somebody who was home picking up sticks over the weekend. And this did not go over well.
Well, all right, Scott. I understand exactly where you're coming from.
But I didn't mean it with any hostility.
But unfortunately, that person probably took it the wrong way.
Oh, they certainly did.
Yeah,
they certainly did.
They took it the wrong way.
But do you see what I was saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't explain to you what walking on national television is like and being backstage at a billion-dollar company's event and a $70,000. It's hard for me to compare and contrast to being at home doing yard work. Now, I'm at home doing yard work on certain weekends. That's all I meant.
Right. And I think probably, and it really wouldn't matter what you had said. I think it was the fact that the person really, really wanted to hear a blow-by-blow-by-blow account of your weekend.
Well, I'll tell you, there are stories to tell. And I don't even know if I'll ever get into all of them because it was such... You really don't understand until you're in that position of chauffeur-driven cars everywhere and Marriott hotel rooms and buffets everywhere. And what was the price of those luxury boxes, would you say?
So I didn't look up for the ones at Lincoln Financial Field. I looked up the ones at Green Bay because I was for the memes. I was like, what if we got one at Green Bay one day? But that was for... Anyways, the boxes at Green Bay are anywhere between $10,000 to $25,000.
$25,000 luxury boxes catered with celebrities in there with you, being brought in the back entrances, going up in freight elevators, so you're not to be seen by anybody.
And I figured these ones probably were closer to the $25,000 because they were catered and they were like free drinks in the fridge and things.
So. And it's
so there were four or five other individuals that were also inducted.
Yes.
So, what kind of people, looking at those other four or five, what kind of, or what was the range of the persons that did what you did for Thunderbolt, you know, like what
kind inductors?
Of, yeah, inductors, thank you.
Well, it's interesting. You know, that's an interesting question that nobody's asked. That's a good question. The first person who did the, was, because the guy is still active as a manager, the one who got inducted.
Okay.
So, the person he manages inducted him. So okay. A current wrestler.
I had actually brought this up. Sorry.
The daughter and son did the person before me. Mm-hmm. Somebody, the woman wrestler who got inducted, Bull, a person she had wrestled, inducted okay. her. And I think it was always somebody in the wrestling business. I was the only outsider who inducted anybody.
Yeah, that's actually what I was about to say. I had brought that up to Carrington during, like, we were actually sitting ringside at the Hall of Fame thing, and I was like, you know, I was just sitting, like, I was, you know, I was thinking about it, and Scott's the only one who's inducting somebody that doesn't have anything to do with wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was done purposefully. I really do. I think they wanted to bring an outsider in who had somewhat of a career in broadcasting because it legitimized it. Because they've done that before. Like, they'll bring Bob Costas in to do something. Or, well, like, Snoop Dogg was at WrestleMania. Kelsey had been there. The first Kelsey had been there the night before. The person who did the national anthem was a two-time Grammy winner. I think they do
Pat
that.
Pat McAfee was there.
Pat McAfee was there.
So it wasn't like Thunderbolt said, hey, this is the person that I want, and, you know, this... There was some cooperation on their part, or...
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I mean, they were more than happy to have you.
Well, yeah, and because it sounds... See, this is where those moments where you're trying to sound modest, but I tried to explain this to somebody the other day, because somebody said to me, I think it was after that comment. Now, again, I don't want to misquote this person, but they were already angry, I think. And they said, well, the only reason you were there was because Thunderbolt wanted you there. And I said, well, the billion-dollar WWE, from what I saw, and the bazillion producers they have, and the 100 people they've got working back there, was not going to let anybody just walk out on their national television program without a speech. And I was the only one who didn't have one, by the way. Loaded in the prompter and do that.
Thunderbolt
didn't have one.
Yes, but beside you too.
So besides us, everybody had one in the prompter. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they were just going to let us walk out there willy-nilly
say whatever.
Yeah, and for somebody who was going to freeze up right. on national television, I don't think it would have happened.
Right.
So yeah, I think when he I think Thunderbolt suggested it.
Okay.
But they were more than happy to jump on it. And as a matter of fact, after he suggested it, I dealt more with them than him.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. So there you go. But there are all kinds of interesting backstage stories, and I think I've told some of them on the air, but one of the most interesting things that I thought was the head man, who the guy is running the show, head executive producer, running everything, his name's Bruce Pritchard, and the show is going on because we were not the last... You know, there was The Rock was after us. Well, there you go. The Rock was one of the other presenters. So there you go. So we're finishing up, and The Rock is going on. Now, Bruce is in the back, and he's got a headset on. He's got the monitor in front of him. You know, he's calling the show, calling the shots. And when I went through, he stood up, took his headset off. Great job. Great speech. Have you met our head writer, Brian Gewirtz? You know.
Yeah.
So he was very gracious and didn't have to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what it's like. But it is it's like being, I imagine, like on a space shuttle when you are back there before you're about to go on. Because all these monitors, you can see the 21,000 people of what's going on out there, but you know it's right through this curtain, which is right beside you. You know that's where it is. And there are 1,000 people at that point running around back there. Are you nervous? Do you need anything? Is there anything we can get you? You know, that's what's going on back there at that point.
So when you had the rehearsal earlier in the day, did you do like a dry run? I mean, did they explain to you what you had to do? And then did you do it with all the, you know, all the presentations?
Yeah.
And, I mean, did you do like a practice run?
I'll tell you what we practiced. We practiced order.
Okay.
We practiced where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
We did mic checks so they could check all our voice levels. But you know, as far as speech goes, no.
Okay.
Didn't run that at all. You know how they checked my voice level was they had Muhammad Ali's wife's speech up there.
Okay.
And I read a little bit of it, which was on the teleprompter.
Okay. All right.
That's how they checked the voice.
Cool.
Because I didn't have a speech in front of me.
Great.
So that's what we did.
Wow. That's great. Well, and to our listeners out there, I'd like you to take note of the fact that I got an interview of Scott Spears. He never does interviews on his show. He doesn't let people interview him. And I just got you an interview.
You got an interview right there of things that had happened. But, you know, it was just fascinating to be in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
It really – and I will say, as I said earlier on, and I'm not going to go into the great detail again, I've been to football games and baseball games, and it's not about being a fan because I couldn't tell you 10% of the wrestlers who were there that night. But the WWE's fans and crowd and reactions and fireworks show – unparalleled.
And it was a big production. Like they had dozens or literally hundreds of people working on the production.
Hundreds. Boxes, television trucks everywhere. I mean, it was unbelievable, their production. And in the main event, when it was heating, Carrington, we'll have to hear it at some point. She was taking some audio.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing a little play-by-play of what was going on in the main event. She is sitting right next to me in a luxury box. So it's not like we're right out on the field. I mean, the window was open, but I couldn't hear her. I mean, it was hard for me to hear her. That's how loud the crowd was. I mean, their fans are, they're ready to go.
Wow.
It was something.
Yeah.
You were there as well.
Yes, I was.
There you go.
He was Scott's basically. I mean, I didn't know what else to add there. I mean, it was loud. I mean, we were, like you said, we were up in the luxury box. The windows were open, but we were not sitting like in the audience or anything. So I mean, it was I was also sitting there next to them. I don't know if I was in this recording or not, but either way, it was loud. I do know that because like there was a point in time where I because Carrington had started it off and she was talking, and then the crowd started screaming and I couldn't hear Carrington anymore.
And she's sitting right next to you.
Yeah, she's sitting right next to
me. I mean, I had to lean into her to make sure I was hearing her because you could not hear.
Now, did you have set mealtime that day, or was there food available?
Oh, there was just food everywhere.
We got there at 2 o'clock.
And it just kept rolling all day long.
We got there at 2 o'clock. The wrestling match wasn't even until 7, and there was food when we got there.
Food and drink. Anything in that refrigerator you could have wanted was in that refrigerator. Anything you wanted.
There was alcohol. There was water. There was pop.
There was pizza. There was hot dogs.
Chicken wings.
Any kind of chip you would want. Subs were there.
Cookies.
I mean, a platter. Woo. And I'll tell you, their catering's not bad either before the Hall of Fame. Down in the commissary, they got everything down there.
Really?
It's a thing.
Mm.
What a production.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I think that, and we did get word that at WrestleMania on Sunday night, 50 states, 68 countries, wow. 7 Canadian provinces,
wow,
people were there from. Which, that tells you the worldwide scope that they have.
Wow, that's amazing.
So that was exciting to me. It could have been hockey. If you have that kind of thing going on, that's a fun atmosphere to be a part of.
Yeah. So you've been dressed up more in the last 6 months than you have at any other time in your life.
Lord. I've signed hot dog buns now. I've had days named after me. I've been on the national television, AP stories, you name it. We've done it.
Did anybody call you when OJ died?
You know, nobody did. Nobody did. How do you feel about that? Should we be have dissed OJ yesterday like everybody else?
I'll tell you what. Yesterday was a day, I mean, for people taking their shots.
God. He's dead. Good riddance.
Yeah.
Okay. We know how you felt about the guy.
I mean, there's a lot of people where things like that happen.
Yeah, but why? Why in that moment? One day?
Right. Well, I mean, let's see. So, like, for instance, when I was in, like, eighth grade, Charles Manson had died. Well. And I was like, you know, I used to like watching Charles Manson videos or interviews on YouTube because the man was just nuts. And he was just entertaining because he just kind of rambled on. And I was like...
Yeah, but Charles Manson was a serial killer. That's why we knew him. We didn't know OJ for being a serial killer. And while if you like him or not, he was acquitted of that crime.
Right. Right. Even regardless of what you think.
You can believe he was guilty.
Right.
And a lot do. Probably, I mean, the majority probably does.
Found innocent.
But not innocent, not guilty.
But as far as, you know...
Was it just a mistrial or something?
No, there's a difference between not guilty and innocent, though.
Right. But, you know, the fact that on the day he dies, I mean...
30 years later, it's not like the crime just happened.
I know. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
See, but now I got to go to that thing again where I did this morning. So, like, yes, the crime itself was 30 years ago, but the man who did the crime just died. So, like, we weren't talking... It's not like we were talking about the crime all the way up until now. Like, he died, and we were just like, oh, yeah, you remember that thing that happened?
Well, but see, that's the thing. He's gotten himself in other problems after that. You know, after that whole trial, you know, and he's gotten in trouble for other things. So there's been plenty of opportunities to tear the guy down.
It's not like the last half of his life was all that pleasant.
Right.
He wasn't exactly getting work.
No.
Yeah.
So, he suffered, and if he did kill them, well, that's awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that only he will know, I guess. Right. And only he knew. So, there it's going to the grave. And now I'm sure people will come out all of a sudden and say, well, he told me over dinner one time. We'll hear that.
There'll be a round of books come out, you know, the real story.
Yeah, now that he's dead and can't refute it.
Right, well, I mean, exactly.
He already wrote a book entitled, If I Did It. Explaining how if he did it, he would have got away with it.
Yeah, but people make a joke of that. But, you know, he did that because so many people... He lost a civil trial. Mm-hmm. And so many people were sure that he had done it. And what he was saying was, if I really wanted to do it and kill them and get away with it, this is what I would have done, not what happened.
Right.
He was trying to clear himself.
Right. Didn't go over that well.
It didn't come off that way.
I don't think the saying, look, man, I didn't murder him, but if I was going to murder him, this is how I would have done it. I don't think
if everybody's calling you a murderer, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
I think the saying that you have a full plan to murder the people that were murdered.
That's not what he was saying. What he was saying was, this mess that happened, I certainly wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have wore my own gloves. Right. I wouldn't have spread blood all over my Bronco. I wouldn't have just went over there with a knife. I'm O.J. Simpson. I'd have hired somebody.
I'd have hired somebody.
I wouldn't have hid in the bushes.
That's right. Hey, he had the money. He could have hired somebody.
Certainly could have.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have ran on my own property and bumped the guest house.
That's right. I mean... Not only could he have hired somebody, he could have hired somebody, and then he could have hired somebody to kill the person that he hired.
And I also wouldn't have done it on a night when I know I have somebody coming to pick me up to take me to the airport.
Exactly.
That's what he was saying.
I didn't read the book. I just thought it was funny. Funny story.
But people make... If you just tell that part, this is how I would have done it.
Right.
That sounds like... He's telling you how he would have done it.
Well, I mean, that's what happened.
Right, but there is a reason why he's telling you why he wouldn't have done it.
Would have.
Would have. How he would have.
Yeah.
In any event. By the way, 30 years later, still no murder weapon. Just like the game of Clue. If you don't find the murder weapon... That's the only thing. Honestly, you can say he's guilty, you can say he's innocent, and if it was a crime of passion and he did just jump, because obviously OJ could have hired somebody. If he's really hiding in the bushes and using his own Louis Vuitton gloves and in such a hurry that he drops his bloody glove on his own property and gets blood on his Bronco door and all that, he still has time to get rid of the weapon. For 30 years, we've never found the weapon. That is weird to me.
It is. It is weird.
Where'd the weapon go?
Yeah.
He went from their house to his house to an airplane. Where did the weapon go? Still to this day, nobody's ever found it.
I don't know. Throw it in the river or something.
I'll tell you, if OJ did do it, he's a genius of a guy. Because if it's a crime of passion, spur of the moment crime, he got rid of the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm. And that rarely ever happens.
And that would have convicted him for sure. Because was he going to dust it for fingerprints? No. That would have 100% convicted him. And nobody could ever find it. And to this day, nobody's ever found it. What would you do with it? I've even tried to run scenarios in my mind, because at that time, it was the biggest story in the world. I mean, he carried it on the plane. I can't... Even in those days, they're not going to carry a big old knife on a plane. Mm. I mean, and the fact that you could get caught at the airport, just the fact, if it was in your bag all wrapped up.
Right.
Oh, what's this bloody dagger doing in here with your clothes, OJ?
I used it to cut my steak that I had just before I got on the plane.
Isn't that bizarre?
It is very bizarre.
And I mean, they looked in lakes. They looked in properties.
They looked everywhere.
Still to this day, have never found it.
Yeah.
I think they could have just thrown it in a body of water.
I mean, they found Jimmy Hoffa when they were looking for it.
That's exactly right. They always find the murder weapon.
That's right.
Always. And to this day, it's never shown up.
Who?
Yeah, there you go. Yep, there you go. Well, that's all I know. But the day the man died, he does have kids. And you know what? He never killed anybody else. And I know that's a weird thing to say, but he didn't.
He only killed the two.
He only
He would have had to kill one
He's
more.
He's not hit two. It wasn't like Doritos.
Yeah, he would have had to kill one more to be an official serial killer.
That's right. But you know what? His kids loved him. Mm-hmm. Apparently he was a good father to them.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Just back there.
Yeah.
The juice is gone.
Yep.
Ruined his career. And I'll tell you what, if he wasn't guilty, ruined his life.
It did.
So there you go.
Yep.
Think about that.
That it ruined his life?
If he didn't do it.
Okay.
When we always think about, he got what he deserved because, you know, he did it. What if he didn't?
I mean, I guess the thing is just who else would have done it?
Well, there are serial killers who kill people every day. Charles Manson. He didn't know Sharon Tate.
Yeah.
Okay, look, first off, Charles Manson did not kill anybody. He ordered the murders. He's not a serial killer.
He's a very highbrow killer.
He's a cult leader, not a serial killer.
He's a sophisticated.
Sophisticated killer.
That's right.
I always appreciate that in a killer. They're sophisticated. And even Charles Manson couldn't beat the rap. OJ did. There you go. In any event, you can say all the horrible things about him for the rest of time, but the one day, you couldn't let it go. I mean,
I agree.
Okay, Pastor, what do you think about the Japanese study that found that writing down things that make them angry, things that make you angry, and tearing them up brings you back to a state of calm?
I think it probably would work for most people, just from the standpoint, okay, you're angry. If you have to take the time to sit down and write it out on paper, that in itself is going to be somewhat of a calming effect. Just the other thing it's going to do is, you know, when you're angry and you got all these things in your mind and they're just going on and you're going over it and over it, when you write it down, something about writing down and making a list, whether it's you're angry or writing a list of things that you have to do, there's a certain amount of relaxation to your brain. I mean, I can think of many times when I've had like six things I had to do, and I just keep going over and over and over in my head and reminding myself and thinking about it. And when you write it down, it kind of like releases your brain from having to wrestle with it. So I can see very easily where you get mad, all right, you sit down and write it down on paper, and then you tear it up. That's kind of like a small way to release that aggression in you.
I thought it was a great idea. Yeah. I mean, if you go in with a defeatist attitude, I'm sure it's not going to work.
Now, I maintain that they left one step out because these were Japanese. So after you write it down on the paper, you got to do a little origami exercise.
Exactly.
And fold it up into a duck or a bird or an elephant and then you tear it up.
Our dragon.
Yeah.
Dragon.
And see, by tearing it up, I killed that thing.
Well, I just think if you go in with a defeatist attitude that this isn't going to work, well, no, it's not going to work.
No, it's not.
But if you believe that it could help you and you believe you want to get rid of that anger in some way, I think it could.
Yeah.
I don't know why it wouldn't.
I think it could, too.
I don't know. I think there are a lot. I mean, I'm sure it would. There are a lot of things like that, though. like how I brought up the color thing earlier, but also supposedly, like, if you're, like, angry or sad or emotional in some way, you could apparently just count numbers in a random order, and it'll, like, because your brain has a hard time, it's not a pattern per se, so you can't, like, 1, 2, 3, you can do that, apparently, and be upset at the same time, but if you just started, like, I don't know, like, 3, 1, 2, 5, and, like, you have to think about it, and all of a sudden, you're thinking about the numbers and not the problem, so it actually will calm you down, because your brain is now having to process these numbers that you're randomly just spewing out, instead of the thing that was making you upset before.
By the way, I can offer you a toll-free line here if you have an opinion on any of this. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. We don't charge for calls. 740-383-9944.
I wasn't saying we do. I don't think I've ever heard you say the toll-free line.
He's not old enough to remember.
You remember when you had to pay for phone calls?
Yes. And you got a bill every month and all your long-distance calls were on there.
Heaven forbid one of your relatives lived in California or something. Gosh, you could have a $60 phone bill.
That's right. So then they came up with this toll-free number. The business paid for it, and you could call it free.
Exactly. So, yeah. So this is a toll-free line, 740-383-9944. It's like a toll-free road.
That's right.
Or a toll house cookie. It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah. 740-383-9944. How do you get rid of anger? Should we have dissed OJ? How could you and Carrington have mended your fences early in that trip?
Do you find me boring?
No. Oh,
okay. Yeah, there you go.
See, I actually quite enjoy every show that I'm on with you.
Okay.
It's good.
No.
Maybe it's that tension.
Maybe. So could you have mended your fences?
See, the issue is I'm not sure what fences there are to mend. It's just more so the fact, like I said, we don't like the same things. We wouldn't have any interesting conversation because anything that's interesting to her, wouldn't be interesting to me. So.
But don't we try to find commonalities? There's got to be something.
Yeah.
I know there's at least one thing.
Am I missing something?
I shall go no further.
I mean, now, you've broached the topic here, Scott.
Kroger.
Oh, wow, what a letdown.
There wasn't anything more deep than that. It's Kroger. What'd you think I meant?
I thought maybe you knew somehow that they both enjoyed tennis or something. I don't know.
I don't know. Do you both enjoy? They might.
We both play tennis on the weekends, yeah.
Yeah. They both have played tennis, I do believe, at some point or another. Yep. But no, they both work at the same place.
Well, that's true. And actually, that gives you a big topic to talk about. A big topic to talk about when you're going to be in a car for 9 hours.
See, the issue with talking about Kroger when you're in the car is that like, she works in the pharmacy, and we work in the, and you know, or like, Scott works up front, I work, you know, in the produce department. So, like, I could talk to Scott because I worked up front, and I do know everybody up front. So, I could have conversation with Scott using names. But the moment I start having a conversation with Carrington using names, I don't know anybody who works in the pharmacy besides her.
Well,
and I don't know anything about the pharmacy.
Well, there's conversation right there. You could say,
just start learning all about the Kroger pharmacy.
Say, you know, Carrington, I've heard of them.
Start asking her about what the medications do.
Yeah, tell us about the drugs.
Yeah. I've got a friend that uses lorazepam. You know, what's that for?
See, the issue is, like, I honestly don't even know what most, like over the counter, like, if I go to a store and I went to, like, the drug section, I don't know what the majority of the over-the-counter drugs do. I'm just like, these are names for sure.
See, now, you've got perfect conversation starters.
Carrington,
I need questions.
I need all of the over-the-counter drug information.
When you ask questions, then you're forcing or inviting the other person to talk. And, you know, I'm sure Carrington would be more than happy to answer your questions.
I asked her questions about Taylor Swift, and it ended in, like, one-sentence responses. So if Taylor Swift can't get a conversation out of Carrington, then I don't know what can.
Because she knows that you really don't care about Taylor Swift. That if you ask her a question...
Hey, I tried to mix it. The business world, I found the business world. I might not be a businessman myself, obviously, but business is interesting to me. So I asked Carrington if Taylor Swift owned any businesses, and she was like, I don't think so. And then that was the whole conversation.
How about that eclipse?
I have a question for
Please
you.
Please do.
I was originally planning to join you all for the Steak and Shake extravaganza.
Yeah, Clips Mania.
I know.
Made the front page of the paper.
And
your name was in there.
I know.
My name. Saved the clipping for the memory book.
The best event I never actually attended.
Exactly. The whole gang was there.
I was actually out on 270 on the east side when it actually happened. But here's my question. From your standpoint in Marion here, was there any traffic?
No. None.
Was there any parking lots overflowing with cars?
None.
Were there any farmers who were charging to park in their field and they had to turn people away because their fields were full?
Not that I saw.
Okay. That was my experience. I mean, I was out and about Monday, and I even made the comment, you know, this was about 9 o'clock Monday morning. I made the comment that I haven't seen this little traffic on the road since the pandemic.
An hour before, I had to go get the balloons because I had just came back from Philadelphia. And an hour before the eclipse, 2:15, I was down at Kroger getting the balloons and driving down the busiest road in Marion, 95, to come back to Steak and Shake, and it was less busy than it was on a normal day.
Yeah, so I can also attest, taking the interstate from Pennsylvania to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to Ohio, there was less traffic on the way back than there was on the way there.
So what happened?
You know, I don't know, but on the way there were signs all along the highway saying that you should like plan ahead. There's going to be lots of Eclipse Monday.
So what happened?
I guess everybody got to their destination a day before.
Well, they overhyped it.
Something happened.
They overhyped it, and schools and government all reacted by closing down, so that kept a lot of people off the road.
Yeah, but I
still don't know, and this goes back 6 months ago when they were first starting to talk about how bad it was going to be. I don't know what they based their estimates on as far as traffic and crowd size. What did they base their estimates on?
I could never figure that out. And that's why I said up until the last day, I would be surprised if this happens.
Right.
I couldn't understand what was supposed to make this happen. I still don't understand. We have 5 hotels.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
What consternation is that going to cause? And by the way, those hotels do get booked during the fair. Those hotels do get booked during Robotics Week. Those hotels do get booked during the Popcorn Festival. What was the difference?
Right. That's a good question.
Except that we talked it to death.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I just couldn't figure that whole thing out.
I wonder how many people are sitting there with unsold T-shirts.
Oh.
Everybody was making T-shirts.
Well, and people are still to this day getting upset now because it's the people who, when you would talk about it before and say it's not going to be a big thing, they'd get, oh, you have no idea. Now those people are very defensive about it, saying, well, it was unbelievable, and it was, it was I enjoyed it.
I agree with what you had said, I guess, I don't know, yesterday, 2 days ago, I can't remember what time when it was, but was the event itself, the actual event of the solar eclipse, I really liked it.
Yes.
I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, from a science standpoint, that was really cool. But from all the other, the hype and the traffic and the T-shirts and everything, I could care less about it.
And I think it made it kind of eclipsed the solar eclipse, because that's all they talked about, and that became the mindset. Right. What were people talking about that weekend? Are we going to be able to get anywhere Monday? They weren't talking about the eclipse itself.
No.
So that's what became the story, and that's why I don't think it will be remembered like a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor or something
like
that.
Well, those are tragedies. I think there's a difference between a tragedy and a
solar eclipse.
Men
on the moon. Okay, let's use men on the moon. You always remember where you were when men walked on the moon.
Yep.
I don't think this is going to be that.
Mm-hmm. No. It'll be forgotten.
But once again, I feel like that's just one of those things that is truly once, like, you can only land on the moon.
That's what this was. That's what this was supposed to be, once in a lifetime.
You see, but that's a lie. It happened when I was in, sixth grade. I know it wasn't, specifically over our region, but, like, there was a whole solar eclipse.
There is a total solar eclipse every 18 months. Every 18 months, somewhere in the world. It just so happens that it only happens in your spot, you know, once in 40 years or 50 years or 200 years. But there's an event, there's a solar eclipse going on every 18 months.
Yeah, so the, I mean, I think the things that you listed off are a little more iconic than the solar eclipse right. that happens continuously.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I mean, when people suggest to me that this, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life.
I guarantee you, in five years, if you ask somebody, what were you doing the day of the eclipse?
That's it.
I mean, like I said, this morning to Jess there, I honestly hadn't thought about the solar eclipse since the solar eclipse until we brought it up. And honestly, again, once the topic of the solar eclipse went away, it was instantly out of my head until we started talking about it again.
Halley's Comet comes around once every 76 years. When it came around the last time, I was in college. I would, you know, I think it was 1979, give or take a year.
By the way,
it happens every 75 or 79 years. Okay, so I was planning, you know, for like 5 years leading up to it. Well, the night that, you know, you could see it, I went somewhere, and a buddy of mine from college, we drove, you know, way out from Columbus, we went to a field, and we watched it, okay? I can't tell you what field we were at. I just know we drove out 70 somewhere. I mean, I can't tell you what time of night it was, you know, what day of the year it was. I remember seeing it, but it wasn't that big an event that I could tell you where I drove to, what time of the day it was, what time, you know. Those are rare, those things where you can remember where you were, what time it was, what you were doing, that type of thing.
Well, and I think that's where we've come in our world today, and maybe that's part of the problem, is that people are trying to be so positive, and there's nothing wrong with that, that anybody who even speaks the slightest bit ill of something is a detractor, is just somebody who's trying to bring them down. If you like it, if you remember where you were and are going to remember that for the rest of your life, good for you. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see that hysteria where I was. I haven't seen that hysteria since. You know, I remember when 9/11 happened, everybody was talking about it in every restaurant for weeks. It went on for weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's just not this. Mm. And also, this is regional.
Right.
You know, this was our area. This is not worldwide. This is not even the United States-wide. It just wasn't that type of thing.
If you lived in California, you just...
Another day.
You might have heard about it on the news.
Well, we weren't talking about it in Philadelphia.
But yeah. Hey, by the way, when you guys were in Philadelphia, there was an earthquake in New York.
There was.
Did you, by any chance, feel anything in Philadelphia, or was there, like, so much going on that...
You know, people said they did, but not really.
Because they said on the news that it could be felt in Philadelphia, but...
Me and Carrington were up in the hotel, and we did feel it. Because the hotel was, like, shaking, and Carrington was like, what's that? And I thought that the wind just picked up, and because it was, you know, a taller building, it was kind of like... But I was like, I didn't think it was tall enough to really sway, but I was like, I mean, best idea for me. And then I got a message from either you or Sean asking...
It's probably Sean.
Yeah, asking if we felt the earthquake, and I was like, well, yeah, that'll do it. Because, I mean, like, we were up in the hotel room, and it was shaking. Like, we felt it for sure.
So that was something you could have talked about on the way back home?
I mean, we talked about it the day of, so, like, there was not much.
Because there wasn't much talking to that going on when I got back to the hotel.
Well, you know, we already talked about it. I mean, what else is there? Like, hey, Scott, did you feel the earthquake? You would have said no anyways, like you just did, and then we would be like, oh, well, so there was an earthquake.
We didn't get that far.
So she gave her one-line answer, and then you've talked about it.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
I think it was one of those things, if nobody had ever said anything, nobody would have ever thought about it.
Okay.
What, the earthquake?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, like I said, I thought the wind just picked up.
you wouldn't have thought a second thing about it.
No. Yeah. I think somebody even probably, because people, like, confuse the earthquake with things that were going on.
Because, like, me and my brother live in a single-wide trailer, and when the wind picks up in the single-wide trailer, the trailer shakes, and it felt similar to that, so that's where I was like, probably just the wind.
Because what time did it happen?
It was like 10 o'clock in the morning or something.
I was going to say, I was in the room still at 10 o'clock in the morning. We didn't go off the air till 10.
No, you were gone.
Well, then it didn't happen at 10.
It didn't happen. I think it was more like 2. My phone's dead.
I think it was like 10:40 that it actually happened, and it was showing up on news feeds like after 11.
Why was at the arena at 10:40?
Okay. Yeah.
Nothing going on there.
I don't remember.
Did you guys call for room service while you were in New York?
No.
Philadelphia?
No, we were always on the go. We spent very little time in the... they spent some time in the room because I was over at rehearsal that day. Mm. But that was about it.
Now, did you have to wear like a pass card the whole time or some kind of identification to get you into places?
No. As long as you... I think when they took you in the back, they just kept everybody else out and they kept you back there. Okay. I think if you had walked out, you probably weren't going to get back in. Yeah. Because I know at one point they pulled Matt and Carrington the night of the Hall of Fame. When the Hall of Fame program started, they pulled them out into the arena.
Okay.
And they took me back to the gorilla position.
Gorilla position?
Gorilla position is the area right before you go out.
Is that... Is specific to wrestling only? Or
because, and the reason it's named that is because, I figured this out over the weekend, the reason it's named that is because an old wrestler named Gorilla Monsoon used to sit back there in the old days, and when somebody would say, go, get ready to go out, they would say, go to Gorilla. And that's why it became the gorilla position.
See? You learn something every day.
Yeah, but now when you go back there, there's a picture of a gorilla, and it says gorilla. And that's where you are.
Yep. I asked somebody where the gorilla was, and they said you can't miss it. So, you know, right down there. And then I was walking down this hallway that they pointed me down, and then there was a sign with a picture of a cartoon gorilla with an arrow that said gorilla.
Yep, gorilla. And that's where it all happens.
Wow,
gorilla's gorilla. That's where everybody's on their headset. It's a small area because when you go out that curtain, it's just a straight shot.
Like it's literally like a hallway that leads into the whole. No, it's honestly not any wider than this room here.
And when you yank that curtain,
and then you walk
there
out.
You are.
You walk out of the curtain, and they're just.
You're in that arena.
You're in the dome.
That had to be kind of impressive.
It really was. I say it was like extremely exciting when they yanked the curtain because it's like NASA back there right before because they're calling the show. They're like, get the camera A, camera B, camera D, because they're getting ready for you to come. Run the get ready video package ready, and you're hearing all this stuff go on. And then that curtain, it's like, go, boom, yank that curtain, and you walk out. And then it's just all that hysteria is gone, but now the arena is 21,000 people. You're standing in the middle of 21,000 people. It's different.
All right, now be honest, Scott. When you're behind that curtain and it's, you know, 5-10 seconds before they pull it and send you out, did you feel little butterflies in your stomach?
You know what? This sounds really bad because I kept waiting for it to come, to be honest. Because there were people back in the dressing rooms before we went down to Gorilla who were out in the hallway practicing their speech and walking back and forth. They were nervous.
Nervous.
And I just wasn't. I don't know why. I just wasn't. I think I was more taken with what was going on, and I knew pretty well that I didn't have to be on a script, so I knew I didn't have to worry about the teleprompter, and I just was, I don't know, I was excited. I was like, let's go.
I can attest, I guess, like, I can't, you know, I don't feel what's going on.
You weren't in my stomach.
But you were there,
you saw me that whole day.
But Scott didn't ever, once again, the allergies. Scott didn't ever seem like he was, nervous. I mean, I think Thunderbolt was a little nervous. Like, because you ask Thunderbolt, like, are you ready? And you just kind of look at you. And then you'd be like, are you excited? That kind of thing. And he'd be like, after a minute, he'd be like, like something along the lines of like always or something like that.
So just to that question, for somebody who was there the entire day with me, never left my, right up until almost the point when I went out, did I ever stop conversation? Did I ever seem nervous? Did I ever anything?
No. If anything, I think you were a little bored.
I was ready to go.
We were sitting back there in the
here comes that boring
canteen
thing again.
What's that place called? The
Gorilla.
Commissary.
Commissary.
Food?
Yes.
Food?
We were sitting back in the commissary area for the Hall of Fame, and And Scott was just looking around trying to see who all was in the room so we could go. He was like, I'm going to try to go find somebody to interview or talk to or get a picture with or something. So he was just walking around basically the whole time trying to find people.
I was bored. I wanted to do something because I thought this is taking longer than I thought. I'm ready to go out there. Let's fire this up.
I don't know. I don't know who, the wrestler's name, but there were two wrestlers who sat down across from us, me and Carrington, and they were like, man, you guys look bored.
Yeah, it was tiring back then.
And we were like, well, you know, we just kind of been sitting here.
And for somebody who was, how far would you say you were away from me when I was actually giving the speech? Because you were down there.
If you were like pressed up against this wall, we were probably like, if this wall was like leveled out here, we'd probably be like all the way in that little crevice there.
Okay, so you were maybe 10 feet, 20 feet away from me? Okay, so as I'm up giving the speech, did I seem nervous, shaken?
I don't think so.
I was fine.
Cool.
Don't know why.
But you were.
It's weird. It's a weird thing. I don't know what that was about. And I understand why most people would be nervous.
Yeah. It wasn't nerves. There's just a feeling for it. I can't think of what it's called. But it was like you were almost a little bit like a... in awe or something like that, because like when you got to the arena, like I have pictures of you just kind of like, you know, looking around at the people in the audience, and that's what then you could, you know.
No.
So you were just kind of like, man.
Well, you really want to know what I was doing? Because I can tell you the truth on that one. Are you talking about when I got to the podium?
Oh, you're talking about
the video.
You know what I was doing?
Yeah. That's what I was doing.
So, what were you doing?
Max talking. You know about when the night of the show, when I, because they had to get Thunderbolt in the ring, which you didn't see on television because he was in a wheelchair. So I walked up in on the stage, but the video package is playing at this point. So you can hear it in the arena. And they had told me, they said, you're going to be cued from the front of the ring when the video package is over. So I get in the ring, and I'm standing behind the podium, and I can hear the video, so I'm waiting for the video. And this guy comes up from under the ring, and he points to his eyes, and then he points to me, and then he goes back down. So I'm like, okay, well, when the video stops, I'm probably going to go here. But I can't see the video anywhere. I can just hear it. The video, I learned later, is over my head.
Yeah. So
it's
like,
over, straight ahead.
Anybody who was sitting ringside couldn't see the video. Me and Carrington, like, we were straight up, like, necks up and down, and we could like, just barely see the screen. Like, you couldn't even watch the video. Like, you'd be breaking your neck to see, like, a sliver of the screen. So, like, at that point, we were just kind of staring forward, looking at Scott.
So I got on the podium, and I'm like, where is this video at? Where is this coming from? I don't know where. I can't.
It
I
was
can
confusion.
Hear it.
I can hear it, but
I don't know where it is. I don't know where it's at. And then I was looking at that. I thought, well, there's a lot of people in this joint. I mean, this is pretty full joint. But where is that video coming from? And that guy's disappeared now, so I think I'm not going to get my cue. And then when the video stopped, he popped back up, and he just, bam, that finger came at me. Well, I guess he wants me to talk. Video must be over.
All right.
And that was how that went. What's coming up next hour, Pastor?
Next hour, who knows what we're going to do?
Well, that's going to be entertaining.
You've got to stay tuned.
You've got to stay tuned for more. For Matt and Pastor Craig, this is Scott heading for the dugout.
You may try alcohol as young as 9 years old. It's not too early to talk about drinking. For tips on how to begin the conversation, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
OhioNotary.us. Telephone number 740-531-2326. Website OhioNotary.us. Providing notarization services of any document, anywhere in Mid and Central Ohio, at homes and